heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation.
The nation.
And now, Malcolm.
Does anybody out there really think that America's cities are in the shape they need to be in? I mean, does anybody have that sense that A, they're in good shape, and B, that we're doing what we need to do to preserve these cities? I don't know anyone in my life, certainly, that has that sense or that feeling. And then I want you to think ahead. If we stay on the trajectory we're on right now, now I'm talking about all of it. I'm talking about the crime. I'm talking about the drugs. I'm talking about the depression. I'm talking about the welfare state. I'm talking about human trafficking. I'm talking about the whole poker game, people. You take a look at our cities right now and think ahead 10, 20 years from now. What are they going to look like? So if we stay right now where we are and we keep doing the same thing, how do these cities fare and what do they look like just ahead? Now, a lot of people want to make this about race. This is not a darn thing to do about race. This has more to do with ignorant politicians who are dumb than it has to do about race, okay? So let's make that clear up front. I mean, we all like great urban city living when it's right. But when it's not right, I mean, it's a problem, clearly. Well, today we're going to have a big, big discussion. We have a great panel coming up a little bit later in the show here to talk about this topic. But to save America's cities, we need to let them fail, is what one gentleman says, an author who you've heard and you've seen the column at AmericaOutloud.com. You've got to read that column. To save America's cities, we need to let them fail. Dennis Santiago. We'll start there with Dennis. He's an American strategist, a philosopher, patriot. He focuses on strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, global stability. And so this is a conversation Dennis and I started talking about a few weeks back, and it's something that's near and dear to us on the platform here. One of the things, Dennis, is, you know, that I will say right up front here is politicians, what they love to do is throw money at the problem, especially when it's not their money. So they just, I mean, the trains of dollars we're spending in our cities and getting no results with is sadder than hell. And it seems to always be the quick answer is, and think about it. Now, I think everybody will agree with me when I say that the answer that politicians have is tax more, regulate more, empower themselves more, and screw the American people over. That's my soundbite, Dennis. But you say in your article there, you say, literally trillions of dollars have been spent on the infrastructure of the cities. Welfare for the residents and just about every federal program you can think of has totally failed. Why have they failed? Why do you think?
Well, because they were never going to work in the first place. The problem with these theories, they were built in academia. And I've done a lot of work with academic subjects. And the fact of the matter is academic theories tend not to scale into the real world. They're limited. They're experiments. They're thought things. Now, when you take them out in the real world and you get politicians who are basically looking for something that they can say, hey, you know, this is really, really great. I got this idea. It's not really their idea. Okay. And they bring it out and it falls on its face. The problem is by that time, they've made so many political alliances. You've got other people that believe the stuff that's coming out of the schools and because it's their pet theory, because maybe they, you know, they like the professor in college or whatever. And now you're trying to implement this in the real world. And guess what? You're using real people and real lives as laboratory rats. And when it fails, unlike an academic experiment where you just close up the lab, you know, finish out your books and then go away, you have this leftover effect that the consequences of all these things are now sitting there on the streets with people going like, what the heck just happened? And it's happened a number of times with a number of these experiments. There's been no way to moderate them and slow them down or ask tough questions of them because it's politically incorrect to do so. And so now you pile five or six of these onto a city and it becomes an unmanageable mess.
And what's happening is they're not backing down, are they? They continue to push. I don't see any of them backing down, are they?
Well, you know, so here's what I'm seeing in that. I'm seeing that they're beginning to realize that these things don't work, but they don't know what to do about it because they're so invested in it. Same. That if you were, I mean, how do you, like, the last thing a politician ever wants to do is say, oh, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. You know, I was wrong. Right? That's a very hard thing for people with egos to do. And politicians are a class of people that run most of their lives on ego and aggrandizement of their personal image. To get them to say, I'm sorry, is a very difficult thing.
Or
to
they
do.
Made a mistake even, not even I'm sorry. I mean, yeah, you know, yeah. We made a slight mistake. We misjudged or whatever. Yeah. Because
they
what they're
don't
doing,
change course.
Well, they're busy pandering to the constituents to probably to get the into the next election because, as
well,
I say,
donations.
That's all they're.
Well, they need the right, donations, right, yes. Man.
Well, they pander to people. They tell them what they, you know, isn't that the truth though about most politicians though? Don't they tell people what they think they want to hear?
Yes. I mean, and that is part of the problem is that.
I mean, tough love is tough, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are some politicians that say it like it is, but they're very, very rare. Most people, particularly in the urban centers of America, are into telling people what they want to hear. Interestingly enough, a lot of them are into telling people in the elite class of cities what they want to hear. They never listen to the other people. They don't listen to ordinary Americans because, you know, like, we don't count.
Yeah. Well, no, they don't, clearly. And they're listening to the next election or whatever they can tell people that they think is going to get them elected. You know, I want to read you something here. In Forbes, there was a very good piece here. America's largest cities are practically broke. And let me read this to you here. 63 out of America's most populous 75 cities do not have enough money to pay all of their bills. Chicago-based municipal finance watchdog Truth in Accounting revealed the stark news in the third annual financial state of the cities. And what this says is this means to balance the budget, elected officials have not included the true costs of the government in their budget calculations and have pushed costs onto future taxpayers. Sound familiar, Dennis? Sounds like they're just taking road of what the federal government does. I mean, you know, the apple don't fall far from the tree there, does it? So a lot of them are bankrupt. They don't have the money.
Yeah. I think it's actually even worse than that, in that they have basically said we don't have to have the money because we're going to go ask the state or we're going to go ask the federal government for subsidies and grants and whatever to augment stuff. You know, that's overtime money, right? You know, stuff coming in from outside your municipality is extra cash. And what's happened in a lot of these cities, and the reason they're in so much trouble in terms of being able to afford even the agendas that they have, is that, you know, it's a bad idea to live on overtime because it doesn't last.
That's right. Yeah, it's a lesson the feds could take hold of real easy here. You know, you say it could even be worse. I can't even imagine it could be worse than 63 out of 75. I mean, that's pretty dire right there. That they're busted broke, of course, and they're leveraging it out to future taxpayers. You know, I want to tell you something. I live in a county myself, which I will leave nameless, but the county itself, they give you an example. The sales tax, Dennis, was I believe about 6%, and they just went up again this past this past election cycle, and now it's 8.5%. And then I asked, well, why did that happen exactly? Well, the residents voted the tax in for themselves. I mean, how stupid are people that they're voting in a 2.5 cent sales tax increase just so they have more money to blow at the city level?
Well, I mean, you know, you got to fix the streets and the potholes with something, right?
Well, they don't even fix it. I mean, the problem is, I mean, it's like they're not fixing the potholes in California. You got enough of those to, come on, everybody's bitching about the potholes out there.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, well, look, a good city manager, his first big job is to fix potholes, right? I mean, you know, that really is. When you really look at city management, it boils down to keeping the streets so you can drive over them, making
sure. That's the first thing you mean is to fix the potholes?
Yeah, it should be. I mean, you know, because you got to keep things going and, you know, and change the light bulbs and the traffic lights and all that kind of stuff. This is all part of running a city government. If you look at municipal budgets, you know, it's a significant fraction of what they have to spend money on. It's the social programs are really the extra stuff. Okay. And that's, and what they've done is they've started to spend too much on the extra stuff, and it degrades the infrastructure. The problem is it degrades it for everybody else, and then everybody's unhappy. And you start accommodating things. I mean, you know, you got cities that are, that have gigantic encampments of homeless people. I mean, the largest cities now have 60,000, you know, I think the average number for the largest cities that have homeless population problems are up, you know, that's a lot of people, right? And they're all on subsidy, right? Whether directly or indirectly, somehow or other, and they're all affecting all of the areas that that they are in. You see geographic centers that have changed their character in the last 5 years, and it has a spillover effects to the surrounding areas in that they attract more people. You know, so maybe there's 60,000, let's say, in the city of Los Angeles, but there's like a, probably another 30, 40,000 that are like it's in the surrounding county and the neighboring counties.
Yeah.
It's the cities have become magnets for America's problems. And
that's
nothing,
a great way to put it.
We're
right
not really
here.
Doing anything about it.
Hey, they become magnets. That is an excellent soundbite you just say right there. But, you know, there's two roads here we've got here. We've got the residents and the people that live there that are hurting for multiple of reasons. And then you have the illegal immigration problem, which is a magnet to all of the cities, because a lot of the cities we're talking about, Dennis, have become sanctuary cities. And we're talking across the country now. We're talking coast to coast here. We're not just talking California. You know that. You know, it's everywhere, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But, so, yeah. You know, so now you double the population, right? So you got these two
problems.
Things.
Double the problems.
You know? Exactly. And when you have that, so the cost, the carry cost of that goes up for the cities. And it takes away from things, basic services.
Well, then
like
they can't even
models.
Handle it. Right. Then they can't even help the residents because they're too busy helping the illegal population as well. And it's all failing. So then the whole system, you talk about a pothole. The whole city becomes a pothole, becomes a cesspool.
Yeah, the problem with that, you know, because, you know, I live in an urban center too. And the problem with that is the regular people are kind of left to fend for themselves. And you start seeing policies like, you know, we're going to change prison reform. And by the way, you may have to put up with more crime. And I'm like, what? Really? You know, I never did anything wrong. And now you're telling me that, you know, I got to watch out to this because somebody might break into my car if I park it on a street somewhere.
Well, the problem
and
is
it's okay. It's not okay with me, man.
Well, listen, and the bigger problem, too, is that a lot of people who genuinely, realistically need the help, and there are people who generally need the assistance at that moment of life for some travesty, some disaster that's happened in their life. And those people you want to help because, you know, it's the old saying, Dennis, of a hand up or a hand out, you know. I mean, a hand up is fine, but a hand out, that's the problem. I want to talk about the hand out right now with you because there's actually big news here in the last couple of days here. That answers what you're talking about right now, the plight of a lot of these dollars. The Trump administration has just put in place a new policy that will make it so that immigrants now who use or are likely to use public benefits such as food stamps, again, housing vouchers, could be denied green cards. They could be denied those. So interesting, the Department of Homeland Security, they published a change to what's known as the public charge. So it's the public charge rule. And that would make it harder to apply for a green card or earn a visa, okay? And the new policy is set to go in effect, they say, around mid-October, and will expand the definition of what would make an applicant likely to become a public charge. So what this means is, let me explain to everybody. So what this means is that someone who the government has deemed that would be dependent on the government, what we're talking about right now, Dennis, exactly what we're talking about in these cities here. So someone the government deems would become a burden, they would render them ineligible for legal permanent residency status. And by the way, one of the caveat, I want you to opine on this, the Immigration and Nationality Act, by the way, has long allowed that the government reject, this is not a new policy, by the way, this part of it here, had to reject granting permanent residency to immigrants who were determined to be a financial burden on society or a public charge. I mean, that's already there, but they don't follow it. They don't follow the prescription, obviously, which is why we have all this problem and everybody looking for support from a government that's already bankrupt. What do you think of this new program?
Well, actually, you know, here's what I think of that program is when you look at it in the context of the rest of the world, the immigration policies of most other countries require that people that want to immigrate there show that they can meaningfully contribute to the society that they wish to integrate into. And the U.S. has been one of the most lax countries in that. And part of it is because, you know, at the end of World War II, we had so much. And it was this is a very lucky country. And, you know, so we were able to be generous. Those times are changing because we've, again, reached a point where we've got a fraction of our society that are foreign-born or immigrating into this country, where the percentages are back to where they were, but like in the 1860s, when there was a similar tumultuous problem with this kind of thing. And people said, well, you know, what are you meaningfully contributing to the U.S.? Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it's a question that comes up. We don't have as much resources that we did in the past where we were on top of the planet. And so
we're basically,
you know, changing our policies to be aligned with how the rest of the world does it. You're not going to get into Canada unless you contribute to their, get into Argentina or any place like that.
Well, there's no other country that gives it away like we give it away. I mean, come on.
Well, it's because we're nice people.
Yeah, we're idiots. That's what we are. I mean, nice people. Get out of here.
I'm the optimist. You're the one that, you know.
So what do you think about this program? Is this a good idea the Trump administration does this?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think you know, increasing the expectation that
you think it's good?
Yeah. I mean, you know, look, I had a green card once, you know.
Yeah.
I took it seriously.
Why did they let you in? I can't imagine. Why did they give you a pass, buddy?
That's another story. But you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, I I'm a first generation immigrant to this country, right? I'm foreign born. I'm not white. The whole thing, everything you could think of. And you know what? I made it a point in my life to contribute to the United States because I am grateful to be here.
Yeah, no, thank you for saying all of that. And really thank you for saying that, because I think a lot of people, they've heard your voice now on the platform of the network these last few years. You are really part of the program here. And I think we fail to remember, or even people may not even know what you just said. And that's a beautiful thing. And the thing about it is that, and everybody should realize that a Dennis Santiago is about as an American as anybody I know, certainly anybody. I mean, he's a patriot. I mean, he bleeds red, white, and blue, just as I would, as many of you listening would. He does as well. And as he just points out, he's first generation immigrant here. Had a green card at one point. So, I mean, that should tell you plenty. But that is the American dream. And that's the difference. And not that we're having an immigration talk today, but that does play into the plight of many of our cities, both legal and illegal. Now, this thing that they do here, Dennis, with the Trump amendment, I mean, they're going to probably face a lot of legal challenges on that, right? I mean, they're going to be sued, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, everybody. Well, you know, once you have an entitlement, it's really hard to take it away, right? Because that's kind of the that's kind of the thing, right? It's kind of like FDIC insured deposit insurance is up to 250K. You know, they said it was temporary like 10, 15 years ago. It's not temporary. That's permanent. It's very, very hard to take away an entitlement in the United States because, you know, it becomes a right. Or a pseudo right. It isn't really, and it should be reevaluated on a regular basis. I personally believe that these kinds of accommodating regulations should be on a 50-year evaluation cycle, maybe even a 25-year evaluation cycle for some of them, to really look at them and say, do they still apply? Is this something we still want to do? Is this still in the interest of the United States of America? But yeah, it's and yes, there will be acrimony for it, but I think the acrimony is part of how we have the national discussion and narrative about whether or not we're still on the right course. So, you know, bring it on, man.
Yeah, bring it on. Yeah. Well, listen, a couple things here now before we go too far here. First of all, let me tell folks here again, we have a dynamic panel coming up here in just a moment here to join Dennis and I. And this thing is going to explode wide open here, the conversation. I'm certain of that. And it's going to be good stuff, good listening here for sure, good talk radio for all of us to learn something. And we'll get different perspectives and all. Before we do that, again here, and before I get to the point of what I really want to ask you and how we save some of our cities, let me just put that out there, which is really the focus of part of what I'd like to leave folks with today is how we can, instead of just bitching and griping and ranting all day long, people, let's talk about some real strategies. Before I do that, Dennis, and then we'll ask the panel as well, I want to next talk to you about interesting, and I got to get this in here because this is like, I want your opinion on this, but this is a piece that was written just a week ago here in the Los Angeles Times. And allow me to read this to you all here because I think it fits into this conversation here. President Trump is increasingly intent on disparaging urban areas, depicting them as blighted and overrun by criminals and homelessness, all part of a divisive reelection strategy heading into 2020. Trump's denigration of cities is part of an effort to animate a base of rural, mostly white supporters, while depressing minority turnout in places like Milwaukee, Detroit, or Philadelphia, a repeat of the two-pronged strategy that helped him to a surprising Electoral College victory in 2016, and could be a determinative again 4 years later. And to end this piece here, Dennis, it says here, no one has paid a higher price for the far-left destruction agenda than Americans living in our nation's inner cities, is what Trump said at a rally in Cincinnati just about a week or two ago here. And of course, the crowd, and the LA Times points out, Dennis, drawing cheers from the mostly white crowd. We send billions and billions and billions for years and years, and it's stolen money and it's wasted money. And again, these publications like the Los Angeles Times or so many others, everybody plays the race card. It's just where this nation is so hell-bent on having a race war. It's just so sick.
LA Times is smoking crack. All right. Look, Malcolm, I mean,
say what you really mean, will you?
Malcolm, I mean, you know, like after the LA riots in 1992, I spent a year and a half working for Rebuild LA. Okay. Mm-hmm. After all the glittery people had left, and it was just a few people like trying to take care of the cities. I got to know the fabric of the city of Los Angeles down to the neighborhoods, you know, and I attended and saw the people of the city are just as American as anybody else. Amen. All right. They're just as ordinary as anybody else. Mm-hmm. They're just as frustrated as everybody else. Mm-hmm. I see that stuff in the LA Times and other publications and the stuff that you see on the internet. It just makes me mad, man, because you know what? Here's the thing for me. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like white Americans haven't done anything wrong. They're some of the most tolerant people you're ever going to meet on this planet. And they're being used as a foil by people who basically are trying to get selfish agendas for themselves. They're trying to take from the system, and they're using these guys as some sort of excuse for saying, I need more. You know, it's greed is what it is. And it makes me angry. You know, my call to action on that is every foreign-born and every non-white American that's benefited from America needs to stand up and basically say, you guys are full of it. All right? LA Times, you know, like we don't believe that our white neighbors are bad people. Go away and leave us alone so that we can all be Americans together. And this the bottom line here is they're good people. Yeah. Why are we turning them into, the names that people are using now, it's like they're nonsensical. Clearly, it's driven by greed.
Yeah.
Well, bottom line,
what you say is real. I mean, it's genuine. And I think it's important to remind people, too. That's why we can have these kinds of conversations here on America Out Loud, quite frankly, and talk about these things that other people dare to talk about. Like if you listen to Viewpoint on the weekend here, my Sunday news magazine show, you would know that we're not afraid to talk about anything. And when we talked about white supremacy on there with Dr. Carol Swain, and we got so many comments and thoughts provoking conversation we had that Carol and I had, that tremendous feedback we had from that. But we're, the point, Dennis, is we're willing to talk about things that other people aren't willing to talk about. And we're also a mixed group here at America Out Loud. We come from all different backgrounds and ethnic abilities, but we're Americans, and we believe in what we believe in this union. We believe in this republic. We believe in a free society as we do. So we can have these conversations, buddy. Take a minute and tell us, if you were to change and fix the cities, how would you do it? What would be your recipe? I mean, what's the bottom line? 1, 2, 3, 4. How do we do it?
is people need to start quizzing the leaders of the city. I mean, this is going to city council meetings and basically asking them, why are you pursuing these policies that don't work? Okay.
Why are you pursuing them? I like that. Yeah.
Seriously. And you create grassroots movements that basically ask these questions and repeat these questions in a local setting all over the place. There's people that want to do this. They haven't been organized well to have these kinds of cogent questions come out, but it's kind of time for it because, you know, we're kind of running out of time in terms of this stuff. I mean, you know, I don't like going down to downtown LA because I don't know when the bubonic plague thing is going to start.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the people. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store.
Okay, well, you know, in the article here, he says, we've gone from leaving keys under the mats to Wi-Fi cameras at our property lines. And of course, everybody knows what those Wi-Fi cameras are. They're all over the place now. You get the doorbell thing, you got cameras everywhere. That's the new thing now, right? We all have those at some point here. But the point of that article that I'm speaking about is to save America's cities, we need to let them fail. Now, that's a pretty rough headline. I mean, it's a pretty straightforward headline, Dennis, that you when you started to write this piece up. So what we referenced in the early opening part of this is tough love, Dennis, tough love. And that's kind of what you're saying is that we keep throwing money at it. At some point, it's just going to have to fail, and then we'll have to pick up the pieces. That's more or less is the bottom line, right?
Oh, yeah. It's very much the bottom line. You know what I miss in terms of urban planning and stuff is I miss it when, well, the classic thing is Aunt Esther from, you know, Sanford and Son.
I love that show.
Oh, God. I mean, you know, and you that was what shows. Really what I discovered in South Central L.A. is these the lady that basically says, I know jive when I hear it.
Yeah,
right? and they call it like it is. We've lost that. The political correctness has really made it almost impossible for straight talk to come out anymore.
Yeah, no, it has. I mean, well, but again, that on the flip side of that, Trump is changing some of that clearly. I want to go to Ron Edwards first here. Let's bring in our panel here and have some real conversation. Now, Ron is a columnist at America Out Loud. He's a talk show host and a great voice, and we're thrilled always to have Ron here. Ron, what are your thoughts about all this with a capsule version and a question or thought you have for Dennis as well? Your thoughts, sir.
Well, first of all, I want to just tell Dennis that it's an honor to speak with him and that he is more American than most of the mayors that are ruining these great American cities. And I love your column, sir. One of the things that I think that we tend to overlook when it comes to our American cities is it's about the education situation. And we talk about what the mayors and what the governments are doing, but what are the people choosing? In America, a government is nothing more than a reflection of its people. And if its people are continuously indoctrinated against what is good and given horrible educations, they cannot help but be ignorant as adults, as voters, as parents, as citizens, etc. And so to also turn around the situation in the cities, you must permanently turn around the situation in the schoolroom, and I'll even say in the churches as well. What say you about that, Dennis?
I very much totally agree. I mean, I used to have conversations with James Q. Wilson at UCLA about the projections of what happens if you teach people the wrong thing for 20 years. And he basically, you know, we basically said you change society. I've also, by the way, had stink eye from church leaders when I come in with my version of American ideas, because they're not quite into it. And so like my relationships with the Archdiocese of Los Angeles are, well, let's put it, a little bit strained at times.
Okay, just wanted to add that you've got to have critical thinking back in the schools, and also when it comes to great American cities like New York or Cleveland, wherever. Mm-hmm. I get the idea about letting them fail, but what concerns me about that, because there are so many cities in various stages of failing already, right, and they have such an impact on our society, I don't know if that's totally the right way to go. I think that many of them can be turned around if the people are turned around through the education
system. Well, Ron, let me interrupt and say this to you now. All right, sure. And I like what you say there, the way you premise that, your premise on all of that. And any good-hearted person would agree with you, but here's the thing. Mm-hmm. If the voters in these cities, what really gets me, and I get really dumbfounded about, is why the citizens keep electing the same politicians to office, Ron, who are screwing up the cities. Yep. It blows my mind. I simply do not, I cannot rationalize this. I don't find the intellectual point of view on this here. And so the point is, the big deal, Ron, is this. If the citizens don't begin to want change enough, then, Ron, I'm afraid we got to almost let them fail, because there's no other recourse here, buddy. Tell me, is there another recourse?
Well, there is a saying that if you don't know nothing, you got that mixed up. And that's kind of what you're describing. But in order for people to know something and not get it mixed up, they've got to start learning. And you're going to continue to see a repeat of the situation. Even if we turned around the cities, as we should be doing, mm-hmm. They'll go right back to what they are now. Because the people continue to, as you said, Malcolm, they continue to vote the same way. In Detroit, for example, they've been voting the same way, literally, going on six decades.
See, Rob, that drives me crazy, man. Crazy.
But it is so programmed that if you go and approach them about the situation, they are more enamored with the bad principles and the bad people they vote for than the solutions.
Ron, here's the thing. Then they, you know what my answer back to what you're saying right now is, and I wholeheartedly mean this, then they deserve what they have. And you know what I mean by that? Continue to step over the homeless people, deal with the tents, deal with your drugs and deal with your mess. And you know what? Don't bother me.
Yeah. And I agree, but the problem is they're continuing to breed and spread the territory into our county and whoever, do you see what I'm saying?
I do.
Ron is entirely correct with that. The main problem with this is you have a flagship city, right? Yeah. Which has these problems, and it starts to spill over into the surrounding communities, right? Because cities don't live in isolation. They live in the context of, particularly the biggest ones, there's probably 10, 15 cities directly surrounding any major city. So because these cities actually are not that big, right? But they have spillover effects. And one of the things I am seeing as far as cities are concerned is that, they're not all universally failing. The key ones, the ones that get the most airtime, are failing. But the surrounding cities, like I'm in LA County, right? The basic thing is like, oh, no, I'm from the other LA. We don't have those problems over here, right? So
you're not seeing the same thing that they're seeing, that of the images we're seeing of LA.
No. As a matter of fact, there's like arguments between the major metro, the main city and the surrounding cities about like, well, you're not taking any of our homeless people into your cities. And they go like, well, why should we? Right. So there's that argument that goes back and forth. And you see the same thing going. I mean, you look at the city of New York and back to Ron's thing about education. Right. you know, you see the city of New York and the people that are there are trying to equalize access to the best schools by dumbing them down. And, yep. you know, like yeah. these, and these were things that were, you know, these were inventions of Giuliani and people from the I Love New York era where they brought the thing up and you're watching like the city of New York go down. I mean, the last time I walked around Chelsea, man, there's more homeless people there than you can count.
Okay, let me move it on here. And one other point just to highlight, we'll come back to later, but it's an important point that Ron said as well, Dennis, and that is that a lot of people fail to remember this, that government is supposed to be representative of the people. You see, government, and that's what he said, but the point of this, or the bottom line is, government works for the people. And, you know, a lot of people, most people actually forget that. They forget that you are actually the boss of government, even though government acts like they're the boss of you. And that's important to put out there because I think that's lost today on everybody. They think government is the end-all, cure-all, be-all. On that note, let's bring up Barbara McGee. Barbara is a celebrity personal attaché and a life coach, counseling in addiction breakthroughs, and host of LA Miracle here on America Out Loud Talk Radio. Barbara, we haven't talked in a while here, but what's your thought and question and where you're at on this plight of our cities here?
You know, when we talk about sanctuary cities, there is no sanctuary for real America. And that's the problem. The problem that we are facing is the mental health and wellness is not being achieved in these inner cities. And we have people who are suffering from lack of employment, suffering from lack of the right to housing. We have Americans who have lost their homes because they have been bought out or are locked out or taxed out. And those homes have been purchased in Los Angeles by larger conglomerates of foreign entities. The rents are skyrocketing. You have to have a 7.5 credit score to rent an apartment. So some of the problems that are facing these inner cities are not just based on what do we do with 125,000 homeless people in downtown LA that have created tent cities. The problem is how do we get them back into the fabric of America when we have all these other people coming from everywhere else, God bless them, and taking jobs. Right. A lot of people believe that the jobs that people are taking when they come to our country are jobs that are not of prevailing wage. But let me wake you up, America. Prevailing wage means labor union job. That is over $15 an hour in LA County. I don't believe that people that are disenfranchised want to be disenfranchised. I believe that they are left out of the policies. My question for Dennis is simply this. If we don't help those who are disenfranchised that are American, what do you expect that's going to happen in the inner cities? That's not an entitlement. They are Americans that are homeless.
I very much feel the you know, one of the thing that I really keyed off on is that the mental well-being of the normal Americans, the true core residents of these cities is degrading because of these things that are happening around them. You look at San Francisco where the rents are so high, you know, even a six-figure income is not enough to get you an apartment. And you need 2 six-figure incomes to make that happen. They're changing the way they live in these cities because gentrification has been taken to a level that is beyond the affordability of your average American. Now, there are other models though where you also have homeless problems. Salt Lake City being one of them that had a very interesting program. They actually built housing for people who are homeless and move them into it and to give them a way to begin to reintegrate back into society. We don't do that in particularly the coastal cities because you know land is so expensive, but you see there are other experimental models on how to handle homelessness as people congregate into the cities that are out there. And I think it's very important that some of those other models be brought into the narrative of what do we do about growing populations of both domestic homeless and growing populations. Basically, all the people that are winding up, they're being incentivized to go on the dole at this point, right? And that in and of itself is dragging their quality of life down. And in this case, it's dragging the quality of life down of American citizens by saying the only way you're going to do this is, you know, join the welfare cadre of the United States. And, you know, what's that going to do to your self-esteem?
What we're doing is we are having people that are in local zip codes are being employed. People who are with the airport, let's say, LAX, are being employed by the various Inglewood, Compton. These are the people that they're looking to employ. And if every city did that, if every city turned to its local residents to employ them and to empower them to stay in the cities as they're being gentrified.
Well, Barbara, here's what's happening here. There's only so much money in a tax base in a city, in a municipality. Mm-hmm. If cities are spent trying to deal with all these other things, with all the drugs and the trafficking and the homelessness and the plights of these cities that are making them look so depressed, then they can't spend. I think one of the biggest gripes I hear from people is that the politicians are not taking care of the citizens, the residents, which is what you're asking more or less. But Barbara, isn't a lot of that reason is because they're busy doing all kinds of other things, which is like welcoming illegals in, creating sanctuary markets, creating a welfare state. Isn't that part of the problem?
Well, I will say that we went to Detroit to buy property, and I found football fields as blocks, blocks and blocks and blocks. So I went to look for the city council people. They don't have any constituents because their constituents live outside of the city. Those blocks are empty. So it makes you wonder, who's really voting for you? How did you really get in power?
Well, Detroit's an exception, though, to this whole conversation, because Detroit has basically been, they've been raped. I mean, the city of Detroit has been, it's horrible what's happened to Detroit, that once great, beautiful city. All right, well, let's bring it on. I want to bring on Carol Lynn Steiner, please, and welcome her onto the program here. First time Carol's been with us here. She's a former global financial representative, and she's also author of a book called My Bible, for the extended lifespan, offering solutions for good health and lifestyle. Carolyn, your thoughts on this pretty wild conversation we're having about America's cities and your question or thought about it.
Our cities decay and people voting, well, they're voting socialist when they think they're voting democratic is because they really have no knowledge of what socialism is and the decay that it leads to. I wish they had traveled to communist countries as I had done. In my teens, I visited Czechoslovakia and Hungary while they were still communist. And most Americans never, and the voting Americans, never saw the decay that I saw there and what could only happen. Between 2001 to 2010, I represented in Romania the biggest American companies, Halliburton, KBR, General Electric, Tyco, Heil Company. And when Obama was elected, people in Romania, and remember that they executed their dictator Ceausescu, Christmas of 1989, as well as his wife. And over they said to me, "Oh, Ms. Steiner, how could Americans vote for this man? Do they not hear what he says? Do they not read what he has written?" With the flip of the voting switch, dear, they can vote away their freedom. And we had nothing but decay in all the years that we had communism. And it's always been in my mind when people talk about the decay of our city.
Are you seeing the same relevancy here in America right now, Carolyn? Is that it?
The danger of it.
Yeah.
Danger. Without President Trump taking the helm, we were in even more danger. But yes, indeed. First, people have to stop voting for the same officials who have failed previously.
Good luck.
And good luck is the word. It is an impossible situation. Very sadly, they get caught up in the verve of somebody's campaign, and they don't, people stop thinking for themselves and saying, wait a minute, look at what we're going through. I mean, look at Chicago, Illinois, with some of the strictest gun laws in the country. Yeah. They have the highest crime rate in America.
Sure.
Compared to all communities of all sizes, from the smallest towns to the largest cities. Okay. And crime leads to decay. Dennis, I just would agree with you, all that you stated. And would you say that people have got to start voting for new people in office who might do better than the previous failures?
First, with regards to the comparison between the danger for U.S. cities and the models around the rest of the world, where this kind of decay and has caused, you know, failures of complete systems. I mean, there is no Soviet Union anymore, okay? And what there is now is Russia, right? If you look at, so the United States is a $16 trillion economy. We're very, very rich. We're very, very bad at managing our money, but we're very, very rich. Russia is a $1.3 trillion economy. You talk about a depressed place. It is depressed. Almost all of the local and regional districts of Russia are financially underwater. They're poor. Okay, this is what happens when you go down policies that don't work. You wind up with an almost semi-permanent depression where, you know, you sanction crime as a way to make money because you're so desperate for it. And here's my other thought, which has to do with the election of officials at the county and municipal level. If you really examine the way that people come to power at the county and city level in this country, it's dynastic. It's the same surnames, the same families come back again and again and again and run the city because they're gregarious people that know everybody in town and the whole thing, and it changes from generation to generation. Now, some generations of those dynasties are smarter than others, and others are, well, you know, pretty stupid. People need to get beyond the popularity contest and get back to saying, I am a citizen of the United States. It is my responsibility to make sure that my country is going in the right direction, and I'm going to ask tough questions. And if I don't care if your family name has been on the city council for 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 generations, if you're the idiot in the family line, you don't get to go. I'll find somebody that's better. We don't ask that. We should. We don't have a culture right now that is set up to basically incentivize all of us who vote to look in those directions. But it's high time we did, because changing the guard is good.
And the question becomes, Dennis, so who's going to bail these cities and municipalities out? Because as Forbes just ran that piece, a lot of them they're pretty well close to bankrupt now. They don't have the dollars to balance things. They're struggling, and they're pushing it out to future generations, was the piece on Forbes. So who's going to bail them out?
Well, according to Jerry Nadler, Vladimir Putin. Yeah, I'm being glib, because you know what? The fact of the matter is, okay, who's going to bail them out? It comes back to us. Like I said, the United States has the largest economy on the planet. We are so mismanaged in how we use that money in terms of directing it to do good, because we don't have a national agenda. We don't have cohesion. We have a fractured society that can't get its act together.
Right.
It's not like we can't afford to fix this. It's that we don't have the mindset to fix this. That's our problem. The problem with America's cities is in the mirror. Go look at it and then say, oh my God, it's me. I got
to
do something.
Well, to your point though, when you keep saying, you've said twice now, I want listeners to understand something. When you've said twice, you know, and I appreciate your optimism about the fact that we're a rich country, but I would also remind you that we have 22 and almost 23 trillion in debt right now. We are bankrupt as a nation goes. If you put us on a balance sheet right now with liabilities and assets, we're bankrupt.
Yes. And, you know, but again, you know, we got the largest GDP on the planet. How do you
that they're mortgaging away every day we move forward? I mean,
because,
it's insane.
Because we've allowed leaders to basically go to this.
Well, that's what she's saying.
Economy.
And that's what Carolyn is putting out there.
Exactly.
We're electing the same clowns. It's a problem we all have. Ron, why do you think we elect the same clowns time and time again?
Well, we don't know. In some cases, we don't know. And we don't know that we can do better. And Malcolm and Dennis, I would love to add just one more little, might be a minor detail, but a solution to the problems in our cities.
Yeah.
It used to be that cities were places in America where people moved to open a small business. Cleveland and other cities were famous for entrepreneurship.
Sure.
And once, especially during the 1960s, the late 60s, cities started regulating to death small businesses. And small businesses were still the majority employers in this great nation.
That's right.
And so I think the cities would deregulate. I can't tell you how many people that I've talked to, from great cross-section of Americans,
yep,
who have wonderful ideas that I do know, based upon my studies, that in prior generations, they could have opened these businesses and would have been flying into success.
Well, Ron, that's one of the reasons Trump has turned the economy around, and mm-hmm, they don't want to admit it, because he deregulated. He took care of a lot of those regulations, buddy.
No, but not on the local level.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah.
The federal level is much better.
That's
but
right.
On the local level, you go to cities like Detroit.
They're run. Well, who are they run by?
Democrats who love to regulate.
Well, let's go to Barbara. Barbara, why are your Democrats screwing up our cities? to me, sister. Talk to me, please.
I don't believe that we as Americans feel that it is the Democrats or the Republicans. I feel that we feel and we see that.
You sound like a politician.
No, it sounds, it is true that we see that what's happening before us is failing. And we've given this problem, all of us are over 50, we've given this problem to the millennials. And we haven't given them the skill set to be able to deal with it. So now they make twice the money that we do, and they don't have twice the empathy.
Well, that's because your education system and universities have dumped that in the trash. We've already talked about that.
And exactly.
Well, most of those are your liberal friends who run them, the damn professors who are not teaching history anymore. Barbara, come on. How do you think, what's your big aha moment, Ron, to fix it?
My big aha moment is it's two-pronged. It's education and entrepreneurship. Because those are the two things that built our great American cities. People knew what they were doing, and they were free to run businesses, and they prospered. And American cities were at one time the greatest in the world. And I think we can get back to those things. We'll be doing fine.
Yeah, I mean, that's a valid point. But again, the cities themselves, they got to be willing to elect those people out,
yes,
to be able to, because yes, they're not going to go after the two things you talk about,
yeah,
right, Dennis? I mean, education and entrepreneurship, right? I mean, that's good advice that Ron has, but how are we going to get that? How are we going to get them to change their habits in the cities?
The habits are changing whether the cities want them to or not. You got
okay,
the charter schools, private schools are on the up. Basically, people are escaping from the school system. And I personally believe that at a certain point, you're going to see a change in how education is done in this country, where it's going to be, our children are going to be educated by artificial intelligence. So it's going to shed a lot of this political spin that goes into their education right now.
Hold on now. You know what they're going to tell you now? The people who run the AI? That the algorithms, you can hear that bullshit-aloney coming down. Well, the algorithms of the robots. I mean, come on.
Look,
who's going to own them? Google, Facebook, or who? Apple, Mac?
Technology is an interesting thing.
Microsoft.
And that once you pull the pin on the grenade, you have no idea what's going to happen. The thing is, it's inevitable that's going to happen.
Mm.
All right. Now, how you shape that in terms of that's a future struggle that has nothing to do with cities, really, but it has to do with where is the American social culture going to go when it gets impacted even more?
Nobody's even thinking about that.
Coming.
You and I talk about that, and we think about that. And I love doing shows on robots, by the way. I just love it. In fact, I'd like to do a show with robots, actually. That'd be a lot of fun, actually, Carolyn, what's your aha moment? How do we fix the cities beyond, although maybe you've already said it, I don't know. But as far as voting the clowns out and voting the new clowns in, what else would be an aha moment to fix our cities?
Jobs. I was speaking to somebody over the weekend. He's the founder and owner of a huge a company in the United States that's gone global.
Okay.
And he set up a a charitable organization that is working on setting up jobs in the cities having the most trouble around the country, because he feels, and it was interesting speaking to him, that jobs and pushing people into these jobs can create a
better
city.
All right. Well, Carolyn, to your point now, Barbara was saying jobs earlier. Barbara, you were on the job point. But you know, Dennis, I want to remind everybody of something, because you hear Carolyn there, and then Barbara was talking about jobs earlier. Our jobs are doing very well right now. I mean, I didn't hear any of you give credit to the Trump administration and their policies. I mean, they're doing very well with jobs. The unemployment rate is very, very low. In fact, Black America is doing fabulously well in regards to jobs. Barbara, look at the numbers, and the Hispanic America. Dennis, am I right or wrong?
You're right. Basically, right now, the main problem we have with jobs is that we don't have enough skilled labor for the things.
We don't have enough people for the jobs, right?
Yeah, we don't. And you know, so the problem that we have is we have an American workforce that hasn't been trained for the jobs that are there. So they don't qualify to go do this work.
That's
a world where, you know, how are you going to change that? Well, you have to change even at the late stage after they've gone through K-12, and you know, we have to have programs that basically says, look, these are where the jobs are, this is what you got to do, and this is what you need to learn, and this is how you're going to do it. Until we do that, we got a lot of people sitting around going like, I'd like to work, but I don't qualify for this.
Well, I agree about jobs, and I also feel that people need to be trained, and the American dream needs to be shifted. I mean, when you have two single parents, they should room together. You should have a different way that you see this gentrification. Instead of giving up, you should give in to a new dream and a new philosophy on how to live your life. Together we can do it. We can't do it separately.
Okay, excellent. We have the wrong people in office in a lot of these cities, and that's where it's got to start, at the voting booth, isn't it?
Almost. I mean, I'm still of a mind that it starts by looking in the mirror and asking yourself, am I really part of America? And a lot of people can't answer that question with a yes right now. And that's
We'd have to get everybody to do that, though. We can't get everybody to do that, because a lot of people in the cities are in denial.
Yes. And you know what? The people follow fads. And right now it's faddish to poo-poo America. I don't know how that happened.
Or if you're in one of the cities in California, poo-poo in the street.
Well, yes. Well, no. People don't like that here or in San Francisco because it stinks, okay? But the bottom line is it became fashionable to be anti-establishment in this country somewhere around the 1960s, okay? The problem with that is it has consequence, and we are now paying the consequences of that fad. We need to grow up.
Yeah, grow up. Yeah. Well, that is a good ending thought there, to grow up there. What do you think, people? Do you think we can grow up as a people, as an American public potentially here? Where do you think we're going to be 20 years from now in our cities? Now, you all know how bad our cities are. Every one of you know, whether you're left, right, or center, you know, and it's across the board. I mean, it's everything from Baltimore to Portland. I mean, just pick a city, people. It doesn't matter. Chicago, pick a city. It's all over the place. Crime is through the roof. I mean, depression, human trafficking, drugs. The drugs are pouring across the border. I mean, you know, this is a widespread problem. And you can see that the citizenry is getting restless. Well, of course they are. I mean, you got homeless tents across the street, for heaven's sakes. Figure it out, people. I mean, come on. So then what do? So now if you take a snapshot of that picture right there now, just do that. Now, as an intellect, as a person who's got a brain, think about that. And then think 20 years from now of that trajectory happening. What do you think we got? That pothole we talked about, or the hellhole we just put out for it. What we've got is we've got a mess. We've got America no more the beautiful. We'll have to change the song, and we'll have to do something else. But we can't play America the beautiful anymore. We need a new song. Can't do it. Right? It's done, over with. Because what's beautiful about that? Take some photographs of your top cities and see what's beautiful about them. Not a damn thing. It's time to get involved and get loud.